development of revolutionary technique. Four revolutions in history merit our special attention. The study and comparison of the methods employed therein will reveal on the one hand a basic similarity between them, and on the other an interesting advance in technique. With each succeeding upheaval, it is as if we studied the various stages in the evolution of the modern rifle from the original old, Brown Bess. The revolutions in question are firstly the Cromwellian, secondly the French, thirdly the Russian, and lastly the Spanish Revolution of 1936. All four can be proved to have been the work of international Jewry. The first three succeeded, and secured the murder of the reigning monarch and the liquidation of his supporters. In each case, Jewish finance and underground intrigue are clearly traceable, and the earliest measures passed by the revolutionaries have been emancipation for the Jews. Cromwell was financed by various Jews, notably Manasseh ben Israel and Carvajal, the great Jew contractor to his army. On this occasion, Jewish influence remained financial and commercial, while the propaganda weapons and medium were semi-religious, all the Cromwellians being soaked in Old Testament Judaism. Some, such as General Harrison, even carried their Judaism to the length of advocating the adoption of the Mosaic Law as the law of England, and the substitution of Saturday as the Sabbath in place of the Christian Sunday. We are all familiar with the absurd Old Testament passages which the Roundhead rank and file adopted as names, such as Sergeant Obadiah, bind their kings in chains and their nobles in fetters of iron. The Cromwellian Revolution was short-lived. The work of destruction had not been sufficiently thorough to frustrate counter-revolution and restoration of the old regime. A second revolution, the so-called Glorious Revolution of 1689, was necessary. This again was financed by Jews, notably Solomon Medina, Suaso, Moses Machado and others. By the French Revolution of 1789, the technique had been notably improved. Secret societies had been developed throughout France on a grand scale in the preceding years. The plans for the liquidation of the former regime are by this time far more drastic. The judicial murder of a kindly and well-intentioned king and a few nobles is replaced by mass murders in prisons and in private houses of the whole of the nobility, clergy, gentry and bourgeoisie, regardless of sex. The Cromwellian damage and desecration of a few churches by their temporary use as stables is developed into a general wrecking of Christian churches, or their conversion into public lavatories, brothels, and markets, and the banning of the practice of the Christian religion and even the ringing of church bells. Civil war is not allowed to develop. The army is sidetracked and kept apart from its king by his seizure at an early stage. So powerful is the unseen control by 1789 that apparently, the dregs of the French population victoriously liquidate all their natural leaders, in itself a most unnatural and suspicious phenomenon. More suspicious still is the sudden appearance of strong bands of armed hooligans, who march on Paris from Lyons and Marseille, and are recorded as being obviously foreigners. Here we have the first formations of alien mercenary and criminal elements, forcing revolutions upon a country not their own, which were to have their finished and expanded prototype in the international brigades, which attempted to force Marxism on Spain 150 years later. England in the 17th century had not been dismembered and hideously remolded on alien lines, but all familiar landmarks in 18th century France were destroyed. The splendid and historic names and titles of counties, departments and families were scrapped, and France divided into numbered squares occupied merely by citizens. Even the months of the calendar were changed. The national flag of France with its lilies and its glories was banned. Instead, the French received the tricolor, badge of murder and rapine. Here, however, the planners made a mistake. The tricolor might not be the honored and famous flag of France. It might be dripping with the blood of massacre, regicide and villainy. It might be stinking with the slime of the Jewish criminals who designed and foisted it upon the French people, but it was proclaimed the national flag, and the national flag it became, and with the national flag came the national army, and the national leader, Napoleon. It was not long before this great Frenchman ran up against the secret powers, who up till then controlled the armies of France. They had planned to use these armies to revolutionize all European states, one after another, to overthrow all leadership, and establish rule of the mob, apparently, in reality of course their own. Just in this manner do the Jews today plan to use the Red Army. Such a policy directed by aliens of this type could not long continue once a national army had thrown up a real national leader. Their outlook and policy must inevitably be poles apart. It was not long before the First Council challenged and overthrew these aliens and their puppets. By the year 1804, Napoleon had come to recognize the Jew and his plans as a menace to France, and all that the revolution had swept away he systematically restored. From this time onwards, Jewish money financed every coalition against him, and Jews today boast that it was Rothschild rather than Wellington who defeated Napoleon. Knowing these things, Hitler, on his occupation of Paris, immediately ordered a permanent guard of honor to be mounted over Napoleon's tomb at the Invalids, and had the body of Eleglin, Napoleon's son by Maria Louisa, brought from Austria, and buried at last in his proper place at the side of his father. When we come to examine the Russian Revolution, we find that the technique is still bolder and far more drastic. On this occasion, no national flag, army, or anthem is permitted. After the dregs of the community have apparently accomplished the impossible, and liquidated every other class down to and including the kulak, a man with three cows, they are herded into a polyglot force called the Red Army. Over them waves an international red flag, not the Russian flag. Their anthem is the Internationale. The technique of revolution in Russia was so perfected that to this day it has secured a Jewish regime established there against all counter-strokes. The next revolution to merit our attention is the one that broke out in Spain in 1936. Fortunately for Europe, it was frustrated by General Franco and a number of gallant men, who instantly took the field in opposition to the revolutionary forces, and succeeded in a long struggle in crushing them. This achievement is all the more remarkable in view of the latest development in revolutionary organization, which was then revealed in the shape of the International Brigades. These International Brigades, besides representing the very latest novelty in revolutionary technique, were a remarkable production. They were recruited from criminals, adventurers and dupes, mostly communists, from 52 different countries, mysteriously transported and assembled in formations in Spain within a few weeks of the outbreak of disorder, uniformed in a garb closely related to our battle dress, and armed with weapons bearing the Jewish five-pointed star. This star and the seal of Solomon were upon the signet rings of N.C.O.S, and officers in this communist horde of ill-disciplined ruffians. I have seen them myself in wear. By October 1936, these international brigades were already assembled in Spain in considerable numbers. Undisciplined and blackguardly though they were, the mere fact of a large and well-armed political army intervening suddenly on one side in the early stages of a civil war might reasonably have been counted upon to achieve a decision before the patriotic and decent element in the country could have time to create an adequate fighting machine. Though the British public were kept in total ignorance as to the true significance of what was taking place in Spain, two countries in Europe were alive to the situation. Germany and Italy had each in their turn experienced the throes of communist revolution, and emerged victorious over this foulest of earthly plagues. They knew who had financed and organized the international brigades, and with what fell purpose Barcelona had been declared in October 1936 the capital of the Soviet states of Western Europe. At the critical moment they, Hitler and Mussolini, intervened in just sufficient strength to counter the international brigade, and enable the Spanish people to organize their own army, which, in due course, easily settled the matter. That is to say, as far as Spain was concerned. There was, however, another settlement to come. international jury had been seriously thwarted. They would not rest henceforward until they could have their revenge, until they could by hook or crook turn the guns of the rest of the world against these two states, which in addition to thwarting their designs in Spain were in the process of placing Europe upon a system independent of gold and usury, which, if permitted to develop, would break the Jewish power forever.